Welcome to DIA Connections. Before we get started with this episode, I want to let you know that it contains discussions about post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. It includes related experiences like trauma, distressing events, and emotional struggles. Listener discretion is advised, as these topics may be sensitive or triggering for some individuals.
On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war.
3 days after President Bush made that announcement in March 2003, a chilling video was seen around the world. It wasn't of missiles or tanks or explosions from the aerial bombardment of Baghdad. It was video of Iraqi forces interrogating captured American soldiers.
What's your name?
My name is Edgar from United States.
What's your name?
Sergeant James Riley.
From any country?
Yes. United States.
City?
New Jersey.
The video showed wounded prisoners from the 507th Maintenance Company. They were Army supply specialists traveling in a military convoy heading toward the Iraq city of Al-Nasiriyah. They unintentionally crossed into enemy-held territory, and they were attacked.
It's been a very troubling morning. A short time ago, the Arab television network Al Jazeera aired some very disturbing images showing what it said were dead and wounded Americans.
Iraqi forces killed 11 soldiers from the 507th in the ambush.
The Al Jazeera videotape also shows five other captured Americans being interrogated. One is a woman.
What's your name?
Shauna.
Where are do you come from?
Texas.
From any unit in American Army?
507th Maintenance.
That was Shoshana Johnson. She survived the ambush and was held captive by the Iraqis for 22 days. Shauna, as she prefers to be called, spoke with us about those horrific events that happened more than two decades ago and how the trauma she experienced continues to affect her life today.
PTSD is a chronic disease. There is just no cure. It's something that's going to pop up for the rest of your life. Something's going to trigger a memory you probably haven't thought of in years, and you're going to have a reaction to it.
An important mission at the Defense Intelligence Agency is ensuring the health of our officers to better serve the nation. Issues related to post-traumatic stress disorders are a top priority. Dr. Evelyn Laptuk serves as Deputy Surgeon General.
This is no different than dealing with any other sort of health issue. Mental health is health.
Because Shoshana generously shared her personal journey of coping with PTSD with us, we invited Dr. Laptuk to join us to discuss how DIA provides guidance and support for its globally deployed and stationed workforce on mental health matters, including PTSD.
If you've had a traumatic event or a series of traumatic events in your life, and then you find something that is completely unrelated and can trigger you, meaning you feel that sense of panic, your heart starts beating fast. You feel like the walls are closing in on you and you're just not sure why. Those are some signs that you're experiencing some post-traumatic stress and you need to seek some assistance. You need to tell somebody about it.
That's wise advice from Dr. Laptuk. And here's some from Shoshana Johnson.
Reaching out for mental health help is not a weakness, it is a strength.
This is DIA Connections.
She's a cook with the 507th Maintenance Company and did not expect to see combat. But this past weekend, in the pell-mell push toward Baghdad, her convoy of support vehicles took a wrong turn, found itself cut off and under enemy fire.
Our next guest was serving our country in Iraq when she was captured and held as a prisoner of war for 22 days. Here with her story, please welcome the amazing Shoshana Johnson.
The attention from such a huge amount of people was really intense. It was difficult to deal with.
Thanks for joining us on DIA Connections. We're calling this episode Shoshana's Story. OSG. It stands for the Office of the Surgeon General. It may not be as well known as other offices at DIA, but it does play a critical role in DIA operations worldwide. The Deputy Surgeon General is Dr. Evelyn Laptuk.
So the Office of the Surgeon General is charged with global health, wellness, and medical readiness and preparedness for the DIA workforce. We have our operations division, medical readiness division, psychological assessments, employee assistance program, and occupational safety and health division.
We'll bring Dr. Laptuk back later in the show to talk about the guidance and support that the OSG provides for issues like PTSD. PTSD is something that has affected our special guest, Shoshana Johnson, since 2003. For a little more context on PTSD and Shoshana, let's revisit our last episode, Candid Cameras.
I found out about the possibility of an American being held when I was...
In that show, we shared the story of how a DIA technology team hid a tiny camera in a gym bag to record video inside a Baghdad hospital.
And he installed a small battery-powered video camera into that bag.
This footage played a key role in planning the rescue mission for Jessica Lynch.
Come on, man. Let's get this girl.
Jessica was with Shoshana on that fateful day when their unit was attacked.
It was one of the most dramatic moments of the war. Private First Class Jessica Lynch rescued under the cover of darkness by U.S. Special Forces.
You're doing great, Jessica. You're doing wonderful. Just like I told you, we're on a plane now, and we're going to go to Kuwait.
Jessica Lynch was rescued 9 days after being taken prisoner by Iraqi forces. She was the first American female prisoner of war to be freed. Shoshana Johnson was the second and the first black woman to be rescued. Together, they are forever linked in American military history. Their connection didn't begin in Iraq, though. It began several months earlier at Fort Bliss, Texas, where they served as support specialists with the 507th Maintenance Company. The specialists included mechanics, welders, truck drivers, and supply clerks. There were cooks, too, and that was Shoshana's job. She was a good fit for it because cooking was something that she loved to do.
I started when I was younger when one of my aunts showed me how to make a lemon meringue pie.
Another woman from the 507th that Shoshana became friends with was Lori Paestowa.
And I remember distinctly meeting Pai, and her name is Paestowa, so I was, you know, one of the first things you ask is how you pronounce your name. She tells you, and then she does just call me Pai.
Shoshana was from Texas, Jessica was from West Virginia, and Lori Paestowa was a Native American from Arizona. They were three women with different backgrounds who shared a similar assumption, that since they were support specialists, they were unlikely to see combat.
At the time, as a female cook, I'm not going to be in an infantry unit. I'm not going to be attached to an infantry unit like that. It was supposedly a pretty safe job. Of course, we all know now the way we conduct war is different, and there is no safe job.
Thank you for joining us, Shoshana, to talk about your experiences during and after the Iraq War. And I realize that some of this may be difficult to talk about, so thank you. Before I ask you about Iraq, can you tell me what you remember about Kuwait, which was where you were before going into Iraq?
I went to Kuwait in February. I remember we had the briefing about, you know, where the body bags were in the convoy, and they told us, you know, there might be snipers out there. There's no guarantee that we won't lose anybody.
Wow. So just a few weeks earlier, you're in Texas, not anticipating deploying to a combat zone, and then you're warned about snipers and body bags. How'd you feel hearing that?
You know, at first you get a little scared and a little terrified about it, but, you know, my dad was in the Army. My sister had just come back from her deployment where she supported Afghanistan. I have a great uncle that was Vietnam and Korea. This is not new to the family. The thought that I may die, you know, really came more alive at that moment. Now, did I think I would get injured and captured? No, that never entered my mind. Never, ever.
Okay, then the war starts and you go into Iraq and the 507th is in the back of a long convoy. Did you think that was a safe place to be?
Oh yeah, a large convoy. I was like, it'd be hard to ambush so many vehicles at one time. But we got cut off.
You got cut off. Tell me about that. How did that happen?
We stopped to pick up vehicles that had, you know, it's sand, you get bogged down and stuff. And we ended up picking up some other vehicles that got left behind. And then we got left behind, basically. We also had to hit certain checkpoints. And when you hit the checkpoint, they tell you where to go next. By the time we got to one checkpoint, I know this for a fact, the checkpoint was gone.
I can hear a certain something in your voice, even now when you say the checkpoint was gone. Was that when you thought something wasn't right? Or was it earlier?
That morning of the ambush, we had passed some Marines. And I was like, why are we passing the Marine Corps? That instantly set alarm bells off. We had passed the Marine Corps. And I was like, we're a maintenance company. We're passing the United States Marine Corps. We go through the city of Nazaria. They get communications that the city is unsecure. Get out. We turn around and then we miss another turn. So we miss taking that right turn that originally take us out of the city that we came in. So we have to turn around again. I remember thinking, oh my God, oh my God. And I remember as we're turning around, you see every vehicle that passed you and stuff like that. And I remember seeing Pi and she's shaking her head. She's shaking her head like, no, no, no. Once we start going on our way out, you know, everybody's speeding up. They're hauling butt. The truck in front of us is taking off, and we're taking off also, and then we end up being, like, pushed off the road, and we couldn't get up. We got stuck. We hear gunfire. It sounds like rocks hitting. We're like, okay, this is it. I was like, we gotta get going, we gotta get going. We couldn't get the truck vehicle going. I remember gathering all my magazines. I remember popping the window up front because it pops open so you can fire out of it. I remember seeing a gentleman way off. I fired my weapon, I missed. I remember feeling a crash.
Jessica Lynch and Lori Paestua were very close friends. They called each other Rumi and spent most of their time together. When the ambush occurred, they were riding together in a Humvee, trying to dodge enemy fire coming at them from every direction. The crash Shoshana described was her truck getting slammed from behind by Jessica and Lori's vehicle. Shana, when you turned to see what happened and didn't see any movement from anyone in the Humvee, what were you thinking and what happened next?
I was definitely terrified. People have died at this point. And then I get underneath the vehicle and I'm shot.
A bullet passed through one leg and into the other, breaking a bone in her left leg and severing her right Achilles tendon. She was in agony. Then, someone reached under the truck, grabbed her by the ankles, and dragged her out.
I pretty much thought they were going to kill me. And then they just started beating me. With fists, the butts of the weapons, kicking. Once they realized I was a female, they dragged me off and separated me.
As a mob danced around, shouting triumphantly, they threw her into the backseat of a car.
They were checking my pockets and everything like that, and the gentleman that was in the back with me groped me. I yelled out. He gave me one good slap. The two that were in the front of the vehicle kind of turned around, and he immediately backed off of me. They took us to Baghdad, took most of the day. They stopped along in every little city to show off their captives. I was slapped, I was spit on. We were always blindfolded, hands tied.
Jessica Lynch and Lori Paestua were taken to Saddam Hussein Hospital in Baghdad. Tragically, Lori died from injuries sustained in the attack. She was the first Native American woman to die in combat while serving in the United States military. For Shoshana, 3 weeks of captivity were filled with physical and emotional anguish. Doctors did operate on her legs, but she could barely walk and had to endure the indignity of relying on her male captors to use the facilities. She was tormented by uncertainty, not knowing who in the convoy had survived the ambush and who hadn't. And then there was the constant worry of when rescue would come. Shauna, I understand that they kept moving you from place to place, trying to stay one step ahead of whoever was coming for you, which turned out to be the Marines. Where were you at that point?
We were at a house in Samarra, Iraq. They moved us so far north to Samarra, which is outside of Tikrit. We were in someone's home, which is kind of scary because I knew they're going to be looking for us, but they're going to be looking in prisons and jails and so forth. They can't search every house in Iraq. So it's real scary to be sitting in somebody's home because how are they going to find you?
And how did they find you? What was that scene like?
They got a tip from some Iraqis. They came breaking down the door, kicked down the door on a Sunday morning. It's like a movie, really. You see that stuff on TV where they play soldier and do all this stuff, but this time it really happened. They kicked down the damn door and, you know, talking about get down, get down. And I was like, oh my God, it's clear English. I'm going home.
I can't even imagine what that must have been like. How emotional was that moment?
Being a female in the military and a black female on top of that, you tend to hold on tighter because you don't want to be seen as weak. And I held on because I was like, I'm not going to cry before any of the guys cry. And I did. I didn't. I didn't drop a tear until one of them cried first.
Shoshana returned home to El Paso, Texas, to begin her healing process. She first focused on the physical aspect, which was a struggle, but easier than the mental one. Although she was hurting inside, she delayed seeking help. That's not to say that she didn't talk about what happened in Iraq. She did. And she talked about it on the most popular talk shows in the country.
It's The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
That was awesome. That was really nice. And he arranged for me to take my daughter to Disneyland.
Here we go.
Yeah, Oprah was after I got out, which was really cool.
And then there was the Ellen DeGeneres show.
You were a cook.
Yeah.
You weren't, you know, supposed to be over there shooting at people.
I mean, you're always prepared for that. You're a soldier. Yeah. You got, you know, it's part of our training.
You're like stirring soup and then shooting at people at the same time.
Ellen was cool. I had actually met her months before when we both got Glamour and Women of the Year awards.
How are you?
Tell me about the Glamour Awards, because I saw a picture of you and Jessica Lynch there together.
One of the girls at Glamour commented that there was more buzz about me and Jessica being there than Britney Spears.
Wonderful girl next door, Glam and Woman of the Year, Britney Spears!
So all this attention, and you're with Britney Spears, who at the time was a pretty big deal. What was that like?
You know what? That evening I met Patti LaBelle. Now, I grew up listening to Patti LaBelle. So that had much more impact than Britney Spears.
Shauna crisscrossed the country, from the glitz and glamour of L.A. to the world's largest block party in New York City.
Let the cheers abound. That's a happy-looking group of people.
December 31st, 2003, Times Square on New Year's Eve.
Wonderful party in the world. This is Shauna and Mayor Bloomberg standing by.
I find it interesting that you made all these appearances relatively soon after what happened in Iraq. Was it all a distraction to help you with what was going on?
I don't know if it helped as much as it kind of like kept my mind occupied. I didn't have moments to sit back and go over what happened to me. But eventually things drop off. Time moves on, people forget. And as I spent more time at home and more time alone, all those things came crashing back to me. The things I had been running from.
Shoshana Johnson has a Bronze Star, a Purple Heart, and a Presidential Unit Citation. She also has post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. This is from her book, I'm Still Standing. Quote, my life forever changed because of what happened in Al-Nasiriya on March 23rd, 2003. One day, maybe I'll be able to get through a day when I don't think about it, when I wonder what I could have done to change things.
When I first got back, I was like, I'm fine. I would go to therapy, but I was still resisting. I really started to really fall into this deep depression. I realized I need to commit more to my therapy. 2008 was the first time I was hospitalized.
And what were you hospitalized for?
For deep depression and suicidal ideations. It was a lot. Once the noise quiets down, you have to live with your experience, your guilt of survival, of what you could and could not do.
When you talk about what you could or could not do, are you referring to before the ambush when you knew that the convoy was lost, that you didn't say anything?
Yeah. If I had said something, what would have happened? I could have panicked. I could have screamed. They would have still threw me in the back of the truck and gone on with what they were doing. And that's one of my sticking points that I have to work doing therapy.
DIA is made up of 16,500 people around the world, and half of that workforce is located overseas. About 30% of the workforce is active duty military, and the remaining 70% is civilian. The Office of the Surgeon General is responsible for ensuring the health, the wellness, and the readiness of the workforce, and Dr. Evelyn Laptuk serves as the Deputy Surgeon General. She sat down with historian Paul Isaacson to discuss the stressors described by Shoshana Johnson and the efforts that DIA makes to provide medical support for its workforce.
One of the stories Shoshana has shared with us is that there was a moment in time before her convoy was ambushed that she knew that they were lost, and she felt like she could have or should have spoken up. Could I have done something different and my buddies would be alive or free?
That would be considered completely normal to have that self-conversation. Is there something I should have done differently? Could I have changed the outcome in this situation? You're constantly running that algorithm in your head. What if I had done something differently? Is this my fault? When the self-conversation becomes constant, where you're constantly dwelling on what I should have done differently, then you're losing that forward focus in life. And that is also on that spectrum of post-traumatic stress.
With staff stationed in U.S. embassies in 140 countries and in hundreds of other locations, DIA officers face a range of stressful environments. Being psychologically prepared for deployments and undergoing continuous evaluations are essential to the mission.
What is the breakdown of who's deploying? What types of people from DIA are going overseas?
You have civilians who are filling specific roles for combatant commands that are conducting operations. So you can have analysts that are deploying. You can have people who work in the chief information office. They're the IT folks. They can be going downrange. We have our defense attachés who are placed at embassies that are in either steady state operations or in some cases quite austere and in extreme cases under combat operations. Those attachés are screened as they go through the schooling and training process here at DIA. So they are psychologically evaluated at the beginning, all the way through the process, and then prior to their departure.
Years ago, I deployed for DIA to Iraq, and I remember having one of these psychological interviews both before I left and after I returned. Why do we do these before and after interviews?
You are assessed so that there is comparison between how were you basically when you left? the psychologist can also walk you through some of the emotions that you are experiencing from your return back, because you've been out of society for a while. You've been in another country under some very austere and very stressful conditions.
Explosions were heard in Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, and here in Kharkiv, Russian military vehicles crossing the border from Crimea. This after Russia's president...
We have a lot of hotspots around the world, places of conflict.
Israel appears to have begun a rolling start to its long-anticipated ground invasion, and here is where things...
How does that affect our officers going into those environments?
Our officers are not necessarily in the area of conflict, but maybe in an area adjacent to that, conducting operations, you know, and providing support. Those officers will experience that stress in that type of operating environment, either directly witnessing or receiving reports of activities, some of which can result in some very strong feelings. In certain instances, what comes to mind is that when there is media that is being analyzed, the exposure to that noxious media for some pretty, in certain circumstances, gory events. They may be in an area that is adjacent but not close, but they are still affected by that because of the exposure and the emotions that are heightened from empathizing with folks that are in those conflict zones.
Let me jump in real quick on that term you just used, noxious media. Can you define that for us?
Any type of visual, audio, social media that would be considered very offensive, traumatic, that would affect the person who's watching this and analyzing and looking for certain aspects of it during the course of your job.
This really highlights a really key point, I think, and that is you don't have to be in a combat zone physically. You don't have to be in the military service. You can be a civilian. You can be here in Washington, D.C. You can be at your desk. Talk about how interacting with something unsettling can affect someone at DIA who actually never goes to a combat zone.
DIA has what's called the National Media Exploitation Center, NMEC, and they do exploitation of all sorts of audio and visual types of media that have been captured or collected in various situations and various operations. In a particular instance that I can recall, we had individuals who were repeatedly watching hours and hours of footage of the Taliban torturing and beheading individuals, as well as Al-Qaeda doing the same thing. And that affected them personally. And they are experiencing psychological trauma from repeatedly watching these horrific events.
Post-traumatic stress disorder affects millions of Americans. According to the National Center for PTSD, about 5 out of every 100 adults in the U.S. experience PTSD in any given year. Women are more likely to develop PTSD than men, and it is not exclusive to veterans.
PTSD is not a military issue. It's not a defense issue solely. Anyone who experiences a traumatic event during the course of their lifetime, whether it is from childhood, adolescence, adulthood, it could be sexual trauma, it could be a car crash, it could be a weather event, anything that produces trauma and disruption and personal impact can result in a post-traumatic stress response. And if that post-traumatic stress response is not managed, it will then move into the unproductive and become an ongoing disorder.
John Rambo, a drifter just passing through their town.
Let's talk a little bit about how PTSD is portrayed in popular culture.
I'm glad that you bring that up because unfortunately, when there's a PTSD discussion, it does conjure up images on the television, in the movies, of a veteran, to put it plainly, losing it, snapping.
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Well, who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me?
Is there a share of the population that could potentially experience an event like that? Yes, obviously. But the majority of the population that are experiencing some post-traumatic stress, and whether you want to call it the disorder, is that they're just looking to try to seek some relief. We need to change kind of that in the popular culture and just saying, look, this is no different than dealing with any other sort of health issue. So let's talk about this like we would talk about heart disease or cancer, and how do we help people seek help?
Helping people seek help. That's Shoshana Johnson's mission.
It's a chronic disease, and how you deal with your chronic disease, just like I would say diabetes, is monitoring it. If you have a flare-up or issue, you go get treatment and have those things set up. It may not be where you need therapy once a week and stuff. It may fall off and you can do it every 3 months, every 6 months, but you have to realize the option, you have to have a setup and a plan because it's necessary. What I say very often, especially in the last couple of years when, you know, the light bulb came on in my head, weakness is allowing the disease to control you when you know you have the means to control it. That is weakness.
Shoshana Johnson is doing well. A few years ago, she completed a culinary arts program and now regularly speaks with veterans about the Iraq War and managing PTSD. It's something that gives her strength.
Somebody came to me and said their husband, they spoke to them and they were able to deal with it better. I was like, all worth it.
If you or someone you know is affected by PTSD or similar issues, please reach out to a mental health professional or contact the National Crisis and Suicide Hotline. Dial 988 for support. As always, thanks for listening to DIA Connections.